Yesterday we started the second perek, and we got up to Mishnah Aleph. All we did was the second perek, and now we need to go to Mishnah Beit. So in the transition between perek Rishon and perek Sheni, we learned about the concept of how it is that you can have something that doesn't have a din of any of the shiurim, and it's just called an aver. Now, the reason that was part of the first perek was because since we were discussing the nature of the moment of death and the issue of the human who dies, we wanted also to define the nature of skeletal remains. And because of that, we wanted to get into the Ramah Chevorim. We traced the Ramah Chevorim as ossification centers, and then that made it necessary for us to understand what's the relevance of these ossification centers. The relevance is that if you have Bosar, Gidim, Vatzamot, then no matter how tiny, you're talking about a full Aver that is going to end up being an actual representation of the mate and will be Metame Ba'ohel. Fine. That ended the Perek. But that is a perfect transition to the next perek. The next perek, which is Elu Metamim Ba'ohel, is coming to discuss all of the different types of issues that can be Metamim Ba'ohel. So yesterday we learned, obviously, about the mate and the Avram and Amate, which had already been introduced before. We introduced some new terms, which was Netzel, which was Rakav. Again, we're going to have to go into the details. And we talked about the shiurim of atzomais, a rova atzomais, and the din of binyan, rov binyan, and the din of shidra vegugolet, and what basar karaui was, and so on. Today we continue in Mishnah Beit. There's also things that are bechalal not evorim, revi'is dam, or for that matter, revi'is dam tvusa. Now, revi'is of dam is what the Torah teaches us by using the lashon of al kol nafshot meit. Remember, hadam hu hanefesh, right? So if the dam is nefesh, then that means that sufficient dam to be able to support life, which we learn as a revius of dam, we have as a shear of aloch alabeshim yisinai, that would be metame. But how about if someone was shot? And we don't know the exact moment of death, but the guy bled to death after being shot, and there's blood all over the floor. That's called dam tvusa, which is the blood that is there while the person is mitboseset bidamayich. So he's sitting there lying in his blood. And that the Rabbonin were machmiran because of the innate suffix of which part of this blood came immediately at the time that the bullet entered his heart and which was a moment later after he died. Because of that, they're machmir that even a revius of tvusa, dam tvusa, will be metame. But this is only if it comes mimate echad. But remember, according to Rabbi Akiva, we've had this many times, since the pasuk says, al kol nafshot meit, shtei nefashot, what we're talking about over here, you could have even shnei meitim would be enough. So even if you have a revius that is from two different individuals or three different individuals, it wouldn't matter. It's the amount of generic blood that is important in order to be metame ba'ohel. We're going to see that Rabbi Akiva extends this din, very surprisingly, not only to the din of what we would think is purely generic, which is dam, but even to actual body parts that come from two different mesim. Dam katan, shiatza kulo. Now, how about if you have less than a revius and you have a fetus, and all of the fetus's blood is now on the floor? Rabbi Akiva says that doesn't matter how big the shear is because it's like the equivalent of an entire organism. And because of that, it's the equivalent of a revius, which is literally the opposite of the question of the generic revius, right? So on the one hand, Rabbi Akiva is saying the issue of a revius has nothing to do with the organisms in which this blood was originally functional. And yet when it comes to the entire blood of an organism, it's not nogea how much blood. It's only nogea the fact that it's the blood of an organism. So therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's still going to be metame ba'ohel. And the Chachomim say, somebody interrupting here. Is there a question?
Is it all the blood or
all the blood? which is exactly, let me finish before you ask, where it says exactly why the Chachamim disagree. And the Chachamim say, in order for the blood to be considered the organism, it has to be every last drop of blood. How in the world are you going to get every last drop of blood? Doesn't make sense. So even if it's an embryo, it's not going to be considered all of the blood. Whereas Rabbi Akiva holds, all of the blood is the blood that will come out. Fine. Next, we said, a kizayit of rima. Okay, so what is the din in a case where the body decomposed and what you're left with is maggots? These maggots could be dead or alive. According to Rabbi Eliezer, these maggots represent his actual basar, because the pasuk actually speaks about that the Adam is called Gam Adam is Rima. And because of that lashon, we consider the Rima to actually being part of the Adam, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gam Enosh Rima, which means that the Rima has a din of Enosh. The lashon is Afki Enosh Rima. So then we view the Rima as literally having the same exact tuma as the basar itself. Tremendous chiddush. Okay. And according to the Chachamim, the worms themselves, the maggots themselves are tahor, because we don't consider them to actually be the same as the basar. How about incinerated bodies? Efer serufim. So Rebbe Eliezer says, look, the efer is considered to be the equivalent of skeletal remains. So the same thing, if you had bones, you would have a rova hakav, and that rova hakav, even though it's taken from all over the place, is still going to be metame. Same thing is true over here. If you have a rova hakav of this carbonized material, it's going to be metame. Whereas the Chachomim say the ashes are not bones. It's a completely different thing. And there is no connection at all to the body of the mace in these ashes. Melo tarvad va'od, afar kvarot, tameh. Now, the question over here is, there is a concept, it's funny that I don't remember explaining the afar kvarot yesterday. Did we do the whole Mishnah? Because how would I not remember afar kvarot?
Rebbe didn't address everything in detail.
Rebbe said, okay, that's right. Yeah, because I assumed that we would deal with it in detail. But thank you. Okay, so this idea of the afar kvarot is actually, it's a machlokas exactly how to learn it. According to the Bar Tanura has his own approach of afar kvarot, which he understands to be the question of the interrelationship of the actual rakav. And let me explain what we mean. The real meaning of the idea of rakav hamet is only true, again, halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, what defines that rakav hamet is in the event that what you're looking at is only the remains of the body after it decomposed and is now left as nothing but what looks like sand, just leftover solid material. But if anything else is mixed in that material, then it's not considered to be rakav. So if the person was buried without tachrichin, was buried in an area that was completely lined with marble so that nothing else would get in to the remains, then those remains are considered to be rakav. But how about if you have what is called not rakav, but is actually afar kvarot? So then, afar kvarot could mean that there was plaster that was there, instead of it being straight out marble, which is very rare. So if what we did was instead we put the body into, let's say, one of those kuchim, which normally is used only after decomposition, but over here we line it with plaster. And what happens is, according to most Rishonim, this is how to understand it. The actual burial met the requirements of creating rakav. The problem is that the grave was lined with plaster, such that a couple years after the burial, the plaster ultimately collapses, and gets mixed, little remnants of plaster, gets mixed with the rakaf. So if the plaster had been there lechatchila, it never would have gotten a din of rakav. But once we can say that there was rakav and that it's possible that the plaster collapsed later, so that now we're looking at a mixture, so then even though for rakav itself the shear is melo tarvad, which is a ladleful, which we'll discuss the shear later, but here it would be melo tarvad ve'od afar kvarot. So it would have to be more to allow for the bits of plaster that fell in, and that would also be metame. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, no. If the rakav is mixed with anything else, it's bichlal, not metame as rakav. It doesn't matter before or after. Furthermore, if you really do have rakav hamet, that is, according to everybody, rakav, now the question is, in order for it to be metame ba'ohel, the entire remains have to be in that, not the entire remains, but the entire, Yaakov, please mute yourself. The entire shear of the melo tarvad has to be inside of the ohel. Suppose it's not inside the ohel. So then you might think that if you went ahead and you connected all of these pieces by sticking them together, by putting in water, that would mean that it's all one piece. It's not all one piece. And even if gvalo b'mayim, it is not considered to be a chibur. In which case, if part of it is inside the oil and not the full shear of the melo tarvad, it is not going to be mitame. Moving on now to the third Mishnah. We've discussed, therefore, all of the inyanim that are mitame b'ohel, which was the first topic in our parak, but there are things that are still mitame, but they're not mitame b'ohel. They're only metame b'maga u'b'masa. So what would that be? Well, as we already saw when we were talking about the din of the Beit HaPras, an etzem kisaora, which is very small, the size of a barley grain, and a piece of dirt that comes from Eretz Ha'amim, that was brought into Eretz Yisrael, a Beit HaPras, which we discussed in Shabbos just a day ago, and, of course, an Aver min Amet or an Aver min Achai, but it doesn't have the requisite buser to grow back karaui, which, if you recall, means sufficient to grow back were it connected to a living organism. So when we said it's not metame, we didn't mean it's not metame at all. We meant it's not metame ba'oel, but it will still be metame b'maga b'masa. We also talked about if a spine or a skull is missing this year, and we said that's not metame ba'oel. Right, it's not metame ba'oel. But it still is going to be metame b'mago b'masa. Now comes the famous Mishnah of kamahu chisaron b'shidra, the classic example of a machlokas beit shamayim beit hillel, which in one connection, in the context that it's talking about, has beit shamayim being very machmir and beit hillel being mekel, which is the norm. And yet when we apply the logic to another situation, which is the question of whether something is considered to be a treifa or not, this is exactly the Gemara that we just had an Erev in when we were talking about kechumra of Beit Shammai and kechumra de Beit Hillel, haksil b'choshech holech, remember? Is this example. So if you paskin the chisoron b'shidra to be like Beit Shammai, shtei chulyot, which is a big chumra when it comes to tuma, because if it's only missing one vertebrae, it's going to be metame ba'ol. According to Beit Shammai, it's metame even if it's missing one vertebrae. According to Beit Hillel, no, if it's missing one vertebrae, it's already tahor. Yeah, but if you take that shear and apply it to the question of treifas, at what point is a spine become treifa? Then it turns out that Beit Shammai says only when it's missing two vertebrae. Whereas according to Beit Hillel, now it's a chumra, even if it's missing only one, right? So then if you're going to paskin in both directions, that was the example that we brought about aksil b'choshech holech. So this is that classic example. And there's also the machlokas about what is considered to be chaser in a skull. So Beit Shammai says the shear that is chaser is even a shear that a brain surgeon, a drill of a brain surgeon, would have made, and that is already considered to be chaser. Whereas Beit Hillel says, no, it needs to be the amount that would be yinatel min achai v'yamut, and that could be even less than that size. So because this is Beit Hillel going lekula, is enough to be considered a chisaron. And what type of drill was Beit Shammai referring to? He was talking about a very small drill used by a surgeon, Divrei Rebbe Meir. The Chachomim say, no, Beit Shammai was referring to a drill for building, much bigger. He was talking about the drill that was kept in the Lishka of the Beis HaMikdash, the Begodol Shalishka, which makes was used for, obviously, for Bet HaKabayit, when the workmen needed to fix something in the Beis HaMikdash, which means that Beit Shammai is saying over here only a much larger hole, and then we'd have to understand Beit Hillel commensurately as referring to some larger amount even, which was Kedesh Yinatel Min HaChai.